Do you have an issues, etc. story to tell? We want to hear from you. Tell us your issues, etc. story by calling our comment line before Thursday, April 7th, 618-223-8384. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. Now, the listener with the best story will receive the first three Issues, Etc. books of the month for this year. 618-223-8384. 618-223-8384.
So often those contemporary issues are used to polarize. We see them as calling us together to convene. Our unity is within our diversity.
That's just nonsense. Of course, if you have diversity on key core Christian teachings and doctrines, you've got big-time problems.
Whole fitness for Jesus. I do feel a spiritual connection whenever you have the music on and it's singing about lifting you up and being closer to God. You do feel that.
Pop American Christianity, in an ill-fated attempt to get the gospel out, has really asked the world what it wants.
Washington jet drivers love Issues, Etc.
Well, it is a fascinating story, and it does occupy the latter part, a big latter part, of the first book of the Bible, Genesis. That would indicate some importance there. The story of Joseph, it's been made into a musical. It's been made into movies. Disney took a shot at it once, too. And it fascinates students of the Bible, but what is the point beyond being an intriguing story? Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon, March the 30th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. The church remembers Joseph, the patriarch, Old Testament Joseph, as I like to call him, tomorrow, and we're helping you prepare for that remembrance today here on Issues, Etc. Dr. Andrew Steinman will join us for the better part of this hour. We will conclude this hour hearing from you, our listeners, on the Issues, Etc. comment line. That number is 618-223-8384. Anytime you want to call it with a question, comment, criticism, show, suggestion, 618-223-8384. Now, if you want to reach us for the next hour live here in the studio, we make it easy. 877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943. You can also send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or leave a question or a comment on Joseph the Patriarch at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. Andrew Steinman is a regular guest, professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University Chicago, and author of the Concordia Commentaries on Daniel, Proverbs, and Ezra and Nehemiah. Dr. Steinman, welcome back.
Nice to be with you, Todd.
There's no doubt that it is one of the most compelling page-turning stories in all of the Bible. But what's the point of the Joseph novella, as I was taught to regard it in seminary, this second half of the book of Genesis, all focusing on Joseph and his life?
Well, the point is how God uses Joseph and the other members of his family to move his purpose on towards saving his people and ultimately saving the world through the Messiah. The story of Joseph caps off Genesis and shows us how Genesis has now prepared the people of Israel to be the ones through whom he will eventually bring forth the Savior of the world.
He's called a patriarch, although he doesn't stand in the same caliber of patriarch as does his father or his father before him or his father before him, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And yet he's also regarded as a patriarch, although he has no tribe that will bear his name. Why will the church remember him this way?
Well, I think for two reasons, for the great things he did for his family, and secondly, because although he has no tribe named after him, he actually is the ancestor of two of the largest tribes of Israel, Ephraim and Manasseh. So although he doesn't have one named after him, he actually has probably more Israelites descended from him than any of the other patriarchs.
Then I guess to kind of clear away some confusion that might exist here, he is a transition between that period before and where Moses steps onto the stage. And the whole life of the people changes, not only in terms of their number and their status as a nation, But also, it seems as though kind of that's prehistory. Now we're into the real stuff where Moses, the author of those first five books, is actually penning this stuff from firsthand knowledge. Is it Moses who tells us the story of Joseph?
Yeah, I believe it is. Moses is the author here of Genesis, and Moses probably knows these stories, probably handed down in his family among his people. These are the stories especially of how they got to be in Egypt. So that's probably what accounts for the vividness of these stories as Moses gives them to us, because they're kind of the immediate history of Israel in his day. How did we get down here? What have we been doing down here for 400 plus years?
What do we need to know about Jacob in particular, and the family that eventually became his, so that we can rightly understand how this story of Joseph the patriarch starts off?
Well, we need to understand, you know, how Jacob came about having eventually four wives. He has two wives that are from his uncle Laban, Rachel and Leah, and then he has two wives, these concubines that are given to him by Rachel and Leah, Bilhah and Zilpah. And so we have this dynamic in the family of four wives and 12 sons and one daughter from these wives. And we have to understand that Joseph is caught up in this dynamic because he is, of course, the for much of his early life, the only son of the favored wife, Rachel. And so dad kind of dotes on him. And this sets up, of course, all the intrigue within the family.
So it's Jacob who sows the seeds of Joseph's, what shall we say, falling out of favor with the rest of his brothers.
Yeah, Jacob is largely responsible. He gives him this coat that in the ancient Greek translation was translated many colors, probably not what it was, but anyway, gives him this coat and honors him. But also Joseph himself is partially responsible. When Joseph starts having these dreams about the sheaves bowing down and the sun and the moon bowing down, there are hints, especially in the Hebrew text. It doesn't come across so clearly in the English version of Genesis, but there's hints in the Hebrew text that Joseph is bragging a little bit to his brothers through these dreams, and his brothers resent it. So although dad starts it out, Joseph probably, as a young man, probably takes a little pride in being, you know, the favored one, and brags a little bit, and so brings some of it on himself.
What would this have meant? The father, Jacob, in essence, showing not only favor, but elevating this last of his sons at the time to what should have concerned all the other brothers, a very displaced hierarchy in the inheritance.
Yeah, this is, you know, really out of line to take son number 11 and elevate him above his 10 other brothers, above Reuben and Simeon and Levi, the first three, or Judah, the fourth. This is just, in ancient terms, outrageous. And it shows kind of the family dynamics here that are somewhat dysfunctional. I heard somebody the other day say dysfunctional family is an oxymoron, and maybe it is. All our families, because of sin, are somewhat dysfunctional. But it shows kind of the outrageous dysfunctionality that Jacob allows to fester within his family.
Then the plot eventually turns to murder. That always shocks everybody. It's, let's kill him. Here comes the dreamer. Let's kill him. Are we to be shocked at and these will eventually be the fathers of Israel, at their bloodlust?
Yeah, I think Moses does want us to be shocked at their bloodlust. He wants us, and he wants his original readers, who are all Israelites and took pride in descending from one of these other patriarchs, one of Joseph's brothers. He wants them especially to be shocked, but he wants us too, as readers, to be shocked to see, you know, how bad things had gotten in the family. The family had problems that had gone back, you know, much earlier than this, but because Jacob is somewhat allowing all this to, as I said, fester, because Jacob is somewhat of an absentee father at times, he allows this to grow, and we're kind of shocked at the outcome of some of Jacob's neglect here, that they wish to kill him, and we have to have one brother who stands up for Joseph and says, no, we're not going to kill him. Otherwise, the story would have ended right there.
They do refer to him as the dreamer. You mentioned the dreams are key here, and that kind of leads us to a question that we need to answer before we take our first break. God is kind of absent from this story until near the end of it. Are these dreams, in fact, God sent? The ones that get Joseph at the wrong end of his brother's wrath? About a minute to answer before our first break.
I believe they were, and I think the hint of this is the fact that Joseph doesn't have to tell his brothers what the dreams mean, or his father. The first dream he reports to the brothers know what it means, and they say, are you going to rule over us? And the second dream he tells to his father, and his father says, you mean you're going to rule over your mother and I? And you'll note that when Joseph gets down into Egypt, the Egyptians don't know what their own dreams mean. So what we're being told here, I think, subtly by Moses is these dreams are from God, and the people of God, the chosen people of God, have this capacity given by God to understand what their dreams mean.
Is it, with only about 10 seconds, is this, in essence, Moses saying God will speak to the world through these chosen people?
Absolutely. He's setting them apart and saying, see, they I have chosen, them I have favored for a special purpose in this world.
All right, we'll pick up with more on Joseph the Patriarch with Dr. Andrew Steinman after this.
Are you looking for a church where you can receive the gifts of God in the gospel and the sacraments and in the church's historic worship with lively music? Then come to Hope Lutheran Church in South St. Louis. We're located on the corner of Brannan and Neosho Streets at 5218 Neosho. You can also reach us on the World Wide Web at www.hopelutheranstl.org and give us a call at 314-352-0014. There is hope in St. Louis.
You'll find study notes highlighting the promises of God and Jesus' death for you in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, the Faith Alive Student Bible. This full-color Bible for students ages 8 through high school is edited by Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Carl Fekencher. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase the Faith Alive Study Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040.
The essence of God's Word. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The beautiful shoreline, the calming sound of Lake Michigan, the glorious sunrise, the warm June afternoons. This is Wisconsin Lakeshore Luther Hostel on the campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin, June 11th through the 14th, 2011. The program? Dr. Paul L. Meyer, professor of history at Western Michigan University and frequent guest on Issues Etc. Hit the topic, the Crescent and the Cross, Islam and Christianity. Dr. Meyer will cover the historical background of Muhammad, the rise of Islam around the world, the beliefs and practices of this world religion, and what its future may hold. In addition, the four-day, three-night Luther Hostel includes interesting day trips to area attractions. For details how you can register for Wisconsin Lakeshore Luther Hostel, sponsored by the Concordia Bible Institute on the campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin, visit the Concordia Bible Institute website at www.concordiabible.org or phone 262-243-4343.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. It's Wednesday afternoon, March the 30th. Tomorrow, the church will be remembering Joseph the Patriarch. Dr. Andrew Steinman is our guest for the better part of this hour. A little bit later, we'll hear from you on the Issues Etc. comment line. Dr. Steinman, one more question on and this will come into play a little later in the conversation when we talk about Joseph's ability to interpret dreams, even coming to pagan kings, which is remarkable. Is there an element of not just these people, but then because God's now also communicating somehow with Pharaoh and with Pharaoh's officials, God has an intention for Gentiles, even Gentiles of the likes of the Egyptians?
Yeah, and that's part of what's shown here, is that the Gentiles are used in God's plan to further his total plan for the world. Of course, Jacob is the bearer of the messianic promise, and eventually that will pass to his son Judah. And to keep these people alive, to save them, God uses Egyptians like the baker and the cupbearer and Potiphar, and especially Pharaoh. So these are people that God uses in his way to further his agenda for Israel in particular in this story, but especially for his agenda for the whole world through the Savior eventually.
Joseph is not killed by his brothers. He is sold to, I believe, Midianite traders who take him down to Egypt. We'll pick up with him in Egypt in just a moment. But the brothers have to come up with a plausible story to explain Joseph's absence, which turns out to be kind of some turnabout for Jacob himself, who knows how to deceive others in his youth. Tell us that.
Yeah, they take Joseph's special garment that was given to him by Jacob, and they kill an animal, dip the garment in his blood, take it back to Jacob and say, "We found this. Is this your son's garment?" And it's interesting, they say, "Your son's garment," as if, you know, not our brother. They're distancing themselves away, in essence, from Joseph. "Is this your son's garment?" And Jacob sees it. The conclusion that's leapt to is he must have been torn apart by a wild animal in the wilderness out there. And, of course, Jacob now grieves for his favorite son from his favorite wife, thinking that he's dead all the time, when, of course, we know, as we read the story, that he's down in Egypt.
I can't remember from the text exactly, but do they ever tell Dad that Joseph is dead, or do they let him draw his own conclusion?
They pretty much let him draw his own conclusion. They don't quite lie to him, but they don't quite tell the whole truth. It's one of those places where they set up the circumstances, allow someone to draw a conclusion, and I suppose, although the scripture doesn't say this, I suppose they can kind of assuage their conscience by saying, "Well, I didn't directly lie to Dad." But of course, doing this deception is just as bad as the lie, and of course, this is a family that's very adept at deception, going all the way back to Abraham, who got Sarah to lie about their relationship when they went down to Egypt years ago.
And thus begins the second wave of the seesaw for Joseph. He is favorite son, then presumed dead by father. So, at least as far as Jacob is concerned, no longer a part of the family inheritance. But when he is sold as a slave in Egypt, he's sold to a relatively powerful official who realizes his potential. Pick up the story.
Yeah, he ends up in the house of a man named Potiphar, who's probably in charge of Pharaoh's prisons, which is ironic, considering what's going to happen to Joseph. He makes Joseph a slave in his house, and because everything Joseph touches prospers, because God is with Joseph and blessing him, he eventually rises to be Pharaoh's number one servant, Potiphar's number one servant. Potiphar trusts him with everything in his house. And this, of course, leads to the next phase of Joseph's life, in that he's in charge of everything in his house. Potiphar's not concerned about anything. And Potiphar, who's probably a eunuch, he's described this way, elsewhere, is got this wife Eunuchs did get married, but and eunuchs can have sexual relations, but they lose their desire for it. And so probably Pharaoh's Potiphar's wife is looking around for a sexual relationship because she's not having it with her husband. She fixes on Joseph, whom we're told is a good-looking man. She propositions him, and when he refuses, he says, "How can I sin against God?" He fears God more than he fears even Potiphar, his master. How can I sin against God and do this? So then she lies to Potiphar and says, "This Israelite that you brought into our household, he tried to seduce me and take me to bed." And so Potiphar has Joseph thrown into prison. Ironically, because the text implies that Potiphar is probably the official in charge of Pharaoh's prisons.
So it's up, it's down, it's up, it's down, and it'll happen yet again. In fact, raising up and bringing down becomes an explicit theme in the latter part of this story. What's going on here?
Well, God is showing that, he works through means and circumstances that sometimes aren't as straight line as we would like them to be. That he has his own way to make things happen at the right time in the right place. And so even though Potiphar's wife certainly sins in what she does, that doesn't thwart God's plan, and in fact, it furthers God's plan, because this is how Joseph is brought into contact with the next major players in the story, the deposed baker and cupbearer from Pharaoh's court.
He meets them in prison, and they themselves are having their own dreams, and he ventures some interpretation for them. See, this is where it kind of starts to sound like latter parts of the affinity between Joseph and Daniel are amazing. I know that you've done an entire commentary on Daniel. This is obviously pre-Daniel. What's going on here?
Well, they have these dreams, and they don't know what they mean. Joseph says, "Why are you so down? And we've got these dreams," they said, "and we don't know what they mean." And Joseph says, "Well, doesn't interpretation of dream belong to God?" Joseph, again, very, very much attached to God, very trusting in God. And so he says, "Don't interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, and I will tell you what they mean." So Joseph understands, despite the fact that he's in prison, that God is with him. And so the baker tells his dream, or well, the cupbearer first tells his dream, and Joseph interprets it as you are going to be restored to your position. And then the baker, being encouraged by that, says, "Okay, here's my dream." And it turns out that the baker's dream is that he is going to lose his life. He's going to be taken out of prison too, but kind of feet first. And the point of all this, of course, was that both the baker and the cupbearer were suspected in a plot on Pharaoh's life, and apparently Pharaoh determines it was the baker, not the cupbearer, and so he's executed. The cupbearer is restored, and Joseph says, "Now when you come back to your position, remember me." And one of the ironies that Moses preserves for us is, of course, that he forgets all about Joseph after he's restored. He's so happy to be restored, he just forgets all about this guy who told him that's what the dream meant.
We're going to take another break here in about 2 minutes, Dr. Steinman, but the language, if I remember correctly, in the original of this little stories of the interpretation of the dreams, how Joseph actually expresses it, lifting up your head in two completely different senses, is just masterful on Moses's part. Tell us about it.
Yeah, in the cupbearer's dream, he says this dream means that your head will be lifted up. In other words, this man's head is bowed down in humility, and Pharaoh's going to lift up your head. That is, he's going to remove your humility and bring you back to the court. But with the baker, he says Pharaoh's going to lift up your head too, but in this case, he's going to lift it up entirely off his body. He's going to be beheaded. And so, he uses the same phrase, but in the second time, there's this very bitter irony of lifting up the head is not honoring him at all. It's executing him.
It's Wednesday afternoon, the 30th of March. What kind of questions or comments do you have about Joseph, the patriarch, the church will remember, and we're preparing to remember today? Joseph the Patriarch. Tomorrow the church will be remembering him. Dr. Andrew Steinman is our guest. 1-877-623-MYIE. Your questions and your comments live this Wednesday on Joseph the Patriarch. 1-877-623-6943. Send us a tweet at IssuesETC, an email here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or you can leave your questions or comments on Joseph the Patriarch for Dr. Andrew Steinman in real time at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/IssuesETC, facebook.com/IssuesETC. If you're not already a fan of Issues Etc. on Facebook, you can do so. Just click the like button while you're there and join the many fans that are already joining the Issues Etc. Facebook fan page, facebook.com/IssuesETC. Now, Dr. Andrew Steinman is professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University of Chicago, and he's authored several commentaries, including one in the Concordia Commentary Series on Daniel, Proverbs, and Ezra and Nehemiah. You can find out about each of these commentaries at IssuesETC.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page, or you can purchase them. Call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Any dream will do. I wore my coat with golden lining, bright colors shining, wonderful and new.
Cardinal baseball is in full swing. The St. Clair County Transit District and the Redbird Express provide service to all Cardinal home games. Buses leave from St. Clair Square in Fairview Heights, Illinois, near the water tower. The first bus leaves 2.5 hours before game time, with service every 10 minutes. The last bus leaves 40 minutes prior to the game. The last bus will return from the stadium 25 minutes after the official end of the game. Round-trip fares are $5 for adults, $2 for children ages 5 to 12, and children under 5 ride free. All buses are wheelchair lift equipped and load and unload at the corner of 7th and Clark, right outside of Gate 4 at Busch Stadium. So give yourself a break from traffic and parking hassles and take a ride on the Redbird Express to the next Cardinals home game. Call 618-628-8090 or log on to sccTD.org.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.
A stem cell breakthrough.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Pro-life bioethicists are applauding the recent announcement by researchers at the Harvard Stem Cell Institute that they've discovered a way to reprogram adult skin cells into stem cells. These stem cells are capable of converting to other cells and tissue. Consequently, there is great hope that they will repair damaged parts of the body and even cure certain diseases. As one pro-life leader put it, the ability to ethically produce such stem cells without destroying an embryo should put one of the final nails in the coffin of federally funded embryonic stem cell research.
Are you pro-life? Then visit our website at sba-list.org and discover how you can make a difference. I'm Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. Thanks for taking a stand.
Joseph knew by this his brothers now were honest men. The time had come at last to reunite them all again.
Welcome back. We're talking about Joseph the Patriarch on this Wednesday afternoon, March the 30th. Dr. Andrew Steinman of Concordia University Chicago is our guest. Dr. Steinman, we've come to the point where Joseph is still languishing in prison. And I would say something, if you would, about the span of years that Moses notes when he's telling the story here. He's not just spending some weeks in prison. This is a guy who is, he's doing hard time.
Yeah, he was in prison probably 4 years. 2 years of that were after, or maybe a little over 2 years, were after he interpreted these dreams. And, of course, he doesn't get out. He's hoping to get out, but he doesn't. And it's not until Pharaoh has these dreams a little over 2 years later that he gets out of prison, because then the cupbearer remembers, oh, I know this guy who can interpret dreams, since nobody in Pharaoh's court can seem to tell him what the dreams meant. And, of course, with the interpretation of the dreams, where he talks about 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine, that Pharaoh realizes this guy not only is valuable for interpreting dreams, but we need to put him in charge. He's very wise about what to do with these 7 years, so we can that we can prepare to survive the 7 years of famine. And so this is what leads to Joseph becoming, in essence, prime minister to Pharaoh.
That may also answer a question posed by Michael in Natoma, Kansas. He says, based on the amount of time he spent immersed in Egyptian culture, which of course I should say as an aside, was deeply and paganly religious, how can we, or can we still assume that Joseph had saving faith? Your thoughts there, Dr. Stein.
I think we absolutely can. And when we talk about the end of the story, I don't know how much time we have, but the end of the story really shows us that.
Does his position as second in command afford him the ability to avoid what would have been inevitable religious responsibilities of any Egyptian official?
We don't know. The Bible doesn't say. He may have been in the situation where he had to at least give a wink and a nod at times. And I would assume that Joseph understands this is wrong and repents of it. I mean, he may be in the same situation that we have with another figure in the Old Testament, Naaman, who comes to believe in Israel's God, but knows he has to go back and serve a pagan king. And he asked the prophet Elijah, please forgive me for the times that I'm going to have to do this. Know that I don't believe in what I'm doing, but it's a requirement of the job. And Elijah actually sends him on his way with that understanding.
Then Joseph is elevated by a series of God's interventions through famine. Here comes his family, and he plays with them, or at least it seems he plays with them for a while. Is that what he's doing?
Yeah, it's hard, and scholars have debated, Bible scholars have debated for years exactly what Joseph is doing. Perhaps he is trying to get them to understand the seriousness of their situation that in some ways they brought on themselves. Certainly he is trying to get to see his brother Benjamin. His younger brother Benjamin, number 12 of Jacob's sons, was probably only about 2 years old, probably a toddler, when Joseph was sold into Egypt. He's anxious to see what happened to this younger brother. And so part of it may be maneuvering so he gets to see Benjamin. And it's finally when Benjamin comes down, of course, that Joseph breaks down and cries, eventually reveals himself to his brothers. So part of this might have been his maneuvering to see this younger brother, the only other son of the favored wife, Rachel.
I want to give you about 2 minutes here at the end of our conversation to talk about, as the church prepares to remember him tomorrow, what a remarkable person, sinner in need of forgiveness, but a remarkable person Joseph the Patriarch was.
Yeah, he is a real man of faith. And when we get to the end of the story, the last verses in Genesis, really, they tell us this. Jacob has died in Egypt. Joseph's, you know, been instrumental bringing everybody down to Egypt. He saves them through the famine. They're given land in the Nile Delta. They're doing quite well. Jacob dies. The other brothers say, you know, maybe there's one more trick. Maybe Joseph tricked us all into coming down here, and now he's the most powerful man in Egypt except Pharaoh, and we're in trouble. And they go to Joseph and they say, you know, please don't do us any harm. They're still, after all these years, knowing what they did to Joseph. And Joseph remarkably brings all of this trickery that started with Abraham. Isaac does it. Of course, Rebecca helps Jacob trick Isaac. We have trickery going on with Laban tricking Jacob. We talked about the brothers tricking Jacob. It's been cascading down this family. And Joseph, remarkable as he is, puts an end to it. He says, you don't have to worry about what I'm going to do. I didn't bring you down here to trick you. This was not my doing. It was God's doing. God brought you down here to save many people and keep them alive as it is today. And perhaps those words of Joseph are more pregnant with meaning than he understood. He's probably thinking, first of all, of how God saved his family, his brothers, by providing for them a place where they can get food during this terrible famine. But, of course, it means more than that. God brings them down to Egypt and ultimately will bring them back out of Egypt so they can go to the Promised Land and eventually be the ones through whom the Savior of the world will come. And he'll save many people, not just the people of Israel. So we have this remarkable thing where Joseph, given the opportunity to use this as a trick on his brothers, finally says, no, I respect what God is doing, and I am not going to use what God has done for my own purposes. And I think that makes him a remarkable man.
Dr. Andrew Steinman is professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University, Chicago, and he's author of the Concordia Commentaries on Daniel, Proverbs, and Ezra and Nehemiah. Thank you very much for being our guest.
It's always a pleasure, Todd.